Let's slide back into the saddle for Don Spinball Podcast. We're up to number 110. We're home from Texas, and I want to just recap everything for you, let you know where we are at after Texas, the reveals that happened there, the gameplay, and what I think is going to happen in the near-term future. Let's lock it in, get loaded, fire the missiles. Crashing back at home. Got back home yesterday. What was that, Monday? It's Tuesday now during the week of our Lord, the end of March. We're going into basketball March Madness. Stern March Madness continues to go on. It's almost time for spring break and Florida beaches. I can't wait, but I'm back. Everybody else is getting back too, and I'm letting the dust settle from Texas, and I just kind of wanted to comment on all the mayhem and madness that happened. Somehow, I still managed to have a speaking voice. I don't know how that happened. I must have been screaming straight for three straight days I was there. It is so loud inside that convention hall, as gargantuan as it is. And, you know, this being the Texas event that it is, it's amazing how loud it is and everything in there. Somebody was asking me, Don, how does this compare with Expo? You know, I was there with some first-timers to Expos in general, and what a way to start at Texas. And it is different at Expo. It is different. But at first, I couldn't really conceptualize that or put that into words, but I can now. Texas is a fan forward festival, and Expo is an industry forward. And by that I mean, you know, Texas, of course, the industry's there. Industry's represented by, you know, Barrels of Fun is there. David Fix is running around in a barbecue apron. I mean, it's definitely an industry event, but it seems to be like 60-40 favoring fans, and like that's kind of where it was started. So it is very much a festival that is happening locally in that convention center. Like that's like the nexus of everything is in there. Whereas with Expo, we have a large convention hall, but we also have multiple other side venues going on with, panels and things. You also have, it's taking place in Chicago, so it's easier for industry people to be there. So you'll see more of them because they don't have to travel as much. You'll be able to partake in the tours they do, you know, of, Stern's Factory and American Pinball's doing one. Jersey Jack's going to do one this time too. Like everybody is there in Chicago. We're kind of going there. And it's more the Expo Hall, the other exhibit halls, and then it's going around town and seeing the other events and things. Pinball Olympics is there. So it, as far as scope, it's right at the same level. Like it's a do not miss event. I hope that explains like how the vibe is a little bit different. It's less like chaotic festival and more like, okay, industry show. Let's meet and go over some things. One thing that was common to both of them though is the homebrews, and I think they are really the unsung heroes of this show. You know, every company had their top stuff out there. You know, this is the first time people got to play Looney Tunes and Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Labyrinth was there for the folks in the South, but the hero of the show were these two horror-themed machines, right? Homebrews, Friday the 13th, which was all original, and I think took home Best of Show, and then Saw, which won in its category as a re-theme of Whirlwind. Now, Saw was put together by a team of people with some excellent skills. You know, this wasn't one person's conception, you know, beginning to end, and then, you know, here it is. This was really like who's good at music, who's good at art, who's good at engineering, who's good at wiring. And they all played a role and like came out with what could be a professional production game. I mean, I was simultaneously, and I told the folks this, I was simultaneously inspired and intimidated at the same time as far as ever going into the homebrew realm. I think I'm solidly heading in that direction, and I'm enthused, man, because I've seen what was possible. People have been reaching out, wondering where they can play Saw next. I'd reached out to Glenn the Skateboarder, Glenn Wechner, who did the amazing music for that Saw pinball machine. And it's still a bit up in the air, but it sounds like it for sure, as for sure as anything can be, will be at Expo in Chicago in October. So if you want to find a place to play Saw, you want to put yourself on that Venn diagram of being the right location, right time, I think Expo is a good choice. He says because this game is housed in the Nashville, Tennessee region. So going to the Louisville show, probably not out of consideration. Also, Southern Fried Gaming Expo will be your next time to meet up with Don in Atlanta. That'll be happening in July. That'll probably be the next place you may be able to find it. But sounds like if you were going to pick one spot you want to play this game, this beautifully designed horror-inspired whirlwind, it looks like Expo may be your next choice to do that, or next place to do that. So That's fantastic. This team is getting accolades from everybody. This game is a resume, man. I mean, if I had a pinball company and this was my product, I would not feel bad about it at all. I think this is a game that would sell, generating a ton of enthusiasm. And check out the topper, man. It's like screen accurate, man. The thing is pneumatically operated. The reverse bear trap jaw that rips your head in half, man. It fires as soon as your last ball drains. It's nuts, man. I did go on YouTube and live stream a bit of it. So that's on there. There's a reel. And then I think I was streaming on Facebook for a while. So go check that out however you can. But yeah, Saw was definitely lit. Speaking of lit frames, reached out to Brad Hunter. He makes the lit light up LED frames for trans lights. If you came home with the show with a trans light, you need to have a place to display it. You could build your own box of lights, or you could pick one up from him. He's offering listeners a discount because he's a solid dude. He sent me a review copy eons ago, and I paid him for it. It said, dude, this is amazing. Anyway, he gave a discount code of DON20, D-O-N-T-2-0, and he'll knock $20 off of that. I think it'll be $180 shipped to you. He does have a separate size for the new spooky translight dimensions, too, so whether you have like an original Stern Translite you want to put up there, or you came home with a Looney Tunes or TCM Translite, some friends are reaching out to me. Don, do you know anybody that sells frames of this size? I reached out to Brad, and he says, yeah, man, I've got a spooky size. It's right on the litframes.com website. And if you send anybody my way, give them a discount code, DON20. I'll save them $20 if you want to get one. I will say that these appear to be higher quality than the ones that Stern is selling on the official site. I've got one on my wall. Love it. So he's not sending me any product for this. Just putting it out there. If you want to save yourself $20, it's a great way to do it. Otherwise, build yourself your own box and throw some LED lights in it if you want. But this is plug and play. You can change the colors and things. Comes with a remote control. It's awesome. Love it. If you want to get yourself a game, email Jeff at madpinball.com. Got to spend some time with my buddy Jeff from Mad Pinball. We're just going around having fun like anybody else was here. But he's got games in stock if you want to get them. If you want to get on a list for something coming up next, like the rumors that we're going to get to, I'm going to make myself a note so I can talk about those in a minute. John Wick, ABBA, Matrix. Man, it's going to be, the rest of the year is going to be fire, man. It is only heating up. But email Jeff at madpinball.com. Get your name on a list there. And then if one of these pops off, you know, you've already got a spot in line. I talked to Jeff because we just had these Foo Fighters toppers come out. I got to see one in person. Now, these toppers are $2,000, which is a lot of money by anyone's standards. So I asked him, hey, man, how are they selling? And he said all of his allotment, I think he had around 15 or so, they were gone that first day. So they are expensive. They are definitely cool. And they are definitely selling out. So the only message that we are sending to Stern is that, yes, Daddy, we will pay these prices. Or somebody will. Somebody will. Now, I will say I saw the topper. I got to play the game with the topper with the new callouts. From what I could hear, it was very loud in there. The new topper for Foo Fighters, very cool. I do like the product itself. I'd be in on the product even without owning a Foo Fighters if it was like $7.99, because I might pick up a Foo Fighters down the road later and I would just want to have one. But at $2,000, even if I still had the game, I still honestly, I'm not sure how I would come down on it. It definitely is cool. I like it. I like the light show. I like the animated head that goes back and forth. I wouldn't call it fully animatronic, so I don't know where they're getting that criteria for. When I think fully animatronic, I'm not expecting, you know, a Disney Beauty and the Beast, like a Tokyo Disneyland with a fully articulated bell moving around with full facial features and everything. But I think at least 2 degrees of movement would be sufficient. This thing looks to be a plastic cap, which is painted beautifully. It looks like it came right out of a comic book. It looks like an illustration looking at it. I love the paint job that they did on this, or whether that's plastic or whatever they put on there. It's not just a decal. I mean, it looks good. You know, it's got that comic look, but it really is a shell that turns left and right, and that's about it. Because of wings or whatever on the side of the FooBot's helmet up there, it really only turns about 30 degrees one side than the other. It's not like a full 180 or anything. No articulations with eyes or facial features at all. There is some cool lighting backing it up. There's cool lighting all over the topper, just like any other Stern topper. It looks like they took the art directly off the play field. Its licensor had already approved it. That's probably the easiest way to do it. But there you go, man. So, you know, it's probably has, you know, $160 worth of material in it, if that, is what I would hazard a guess. Plus the licensing cost for this, I'm sure, is associated in there, but this is a high profit margin item for Stern for sure. Even, once you deduct like the $300 or something, that the dealer's getting it for, I think it's still a pretty high margin. I think if you look at the margins on what they get on a pro machine, it can't be more than $1,000 after the, you know, you have to discount for the dealer. The dealers get it. It's got to have some room in there. The bill of materials is probably $4,500 to $5,200. So I'd imagine you probably have the same at least margins on a topper sale as you do on an actual Foo Fighters pro machine, right? So, you know, I'm wondering why they don't just sell a ton of these things at $1,200. Maybe they've looked at it and they're like, you know, we could sell 500 of these at $1,200, or we could sell 250 at $2,000, make the same amount of money and have less build costs or and keep demand high. Maybe that's what they're thinking. Either way, anybody with means or has this game bolted to the floor, they've already bought one of these, clearly, because they're sold out. I just didn't want to circle back that I was able to play Foo Fighters with the topper. I think the topper's amazing. I love it. I wish it did more. I wish it had, you know, I wish it looked like a playset with action figures and everything. I wish it had more animation, like actual physically moving parts. But, you know, it is what it is. But for $2,000 for me, seems well overpriced. And my opinion doesn't matter because they already sold out. So that's the story there. Are we going to see $2,400 toppers next? I think where this opens up an opportunity, and speaking partially to my friends at the Electric Playground, this is where having more budget-friendly options that are just as awesome available in the realm of toppers is a really good idea. You know, when toppers are $500, it doesn't really make sense to have an aftermarket one for $400 because you can get that official one with the one-to-one integration with the game. I'm turning this into topper talk. You know, with an official Stern topper, but at a topper price of $2,000, probably $2,000 plus with where we're heading by the time Jaws comes out next year. I think, you know, coming in somewhere between $500 and $1,000 for a topper that has some cool aspects to it, I think there's some room there for some folks. So I'm going to continue making my own toppers because that's fun for me. I did get mentioned in actually the Kineticist email recently for this week in pinball that I shared pictures of my Jaws topper. I love it. I love my Jaws topper. I'm adding more lights and more interactions to it. You know, it's not a product that I've rolled out on Pinside or anything. But if you're interested in one, I think we can come to some terms. I think $500 is a great price point for a topper that's, you know, three-dimensionally, you know, printed. It's not just flats. It's got some interactivity with lighting. It looks cool. It's actually huge. And it's also on a base plate that custom matches the Stern mounting hardware, so it mounts directly into place. That's what I would expect. If I paid $500 for it, I'd be super happy. So that's why I picked that price. If there's a huge demand, you know, I mean, price would go up. For right now, introductory, if you're interested, go check it out. Also, I'm coming back from Expo. I still have some of the t-shirts that I printed left available. I also have this awesome Fathom Revisited Backlast sticker decal. It's 5.5 inches by 6 inches, high quality. Got it from the Nitro booth. I happen to have one of them that I came back with. And so the next person to buy a t-shirt, a Don's Pinball Podcast t-shirt, silkscreen printed front and back graphics, I'll include this sticker for free. It's $30 shipped. All you have to do is email me at Don's Pinball Podcast and say, like, I want that shirt, I want that Fathom sticker, $30 to Venom or PayPal, and give me an address, and I'll send it right out to you. Extra large, double extra large, large, and I think I might have a medium kicking around. You small guys, you're out of luck. Those sold right out. But I've got a couple t-shirts I came back with. Everybody else, if you're not interested in the Fathom sticker, or you still want a t-shirt, I'll include one of the golden tickets that are left as well. I did this promotion at Expo. I got the idea from somebody. It was genius. I 3D printed basically a thick apron card that was actually a golden ticket from Mr. Dilly Donka over here. And I hid these around the show floor. We had about 12 of them, I think, that went out. They all came back, and you want a t-shirt if you happen to find one. So I was having fun with this. I went around and stuck these to the back boxes of some games, and it would leave a little bit of a corner kind of peeking around. So if you were playing and saw a little plastic corner, that was your clue that there was a golden ticket back there. Go ahead and grab it. The vendors were all in on it, so it was okay to go back there, reach and grab it. I put one underneath Saw, and it lasted for like a day and a half until somebody went down and was able to find it. Spooky Pinball put one in their claw machine. Somebody went through about $3 worth of quarters playing and finally got it, was super happy. This one lady, I forget her name, I think it was Dana or Dana. She kept coming by the booth asking how many tickets were still on the show floor. And then sure enough, she happened to find one of them. I think it was either under a game or stuck to the side of a Jersey Jack topper. But she was so happy when she came by and like she got her ticket. She wanted it signed. She wanted to keep it. So that was permitted. She got her t-shirt, was super happy. Some younger kids came by. They found them too. Like it was way successful, man. People totally dug it. I was walking around in my costume And like people are asking for photos and things. It was super fun. It was just a fun festival atmosphere and completely succeeded. All right, I'm going to get back into some pinball news here. Let's get back into pinball news. Barrels of Fun was killing it, man. You know, you saw their separate little area that they had off the show floor mainly. Off the main show floor for people that were super interested in purchasing a Labyrinth and wanted to play it in a quiet environment, or to reward those folks that had already bought one. They were showing off the game with the new code, the new topper code, the new topper interactions, the light show it plays during multi-ball. Killing it, man. I think they sold all of the all of the Labyrinths that they had on the floor. Got to spend a lot of time with Dave and Brian this time. You know, when I saw them at Expo, that was like the reveal of the game. And you could tell tensions were high. They were really hoping it was going to go over well. This time, these guys are super relaxed, super chill. Spent a ton of time with them. Franchi was hanging out at the booth for a while. Everybody was just digging Labyrinth. They were buying the alternate back glasses and the other accessories that they had. It was just a great time. Even though they were tucked over there in the corner, they were doing awesome. And I couldn't get them drunk enough to find out what their next themes are, but they do have other games that are actively in development. So I think as we see maybe 80% of these labyrinths get built and shipped, we might be looking at a reveal. Might not be till next year. I'm not anticipating seeing something from them, you know, in October or anything, but they are actively, you know, they captured some licenses. And you could tell in their eyes when they're talking to you that they're excited about what's to come. You know, and I rattled off a list of 10 themes that I would love to see in pinball, like I do. And they said, well, you're going to get your wish. So at least some of those I rattled off are actually machines that are in development. And I don't know if they're from them or not, but if somebody's got to be doing Muppet Show, somebody's got to be doing Goonies out there. It just has to happen. It has to happen. And I think these guys have proven that they would be able to do that. So that would be completely awesome. Switching over to Spooky Pinball. Their booth, I called it, their booth was mobbed the entire time at the Texas Pinball Festival. And these games were getting played hard, too. You know, seeing the coils start to get a little weaker with the flippers. The Vux sometimes weren't all making the balls orbit all the way around. They must have been screeching hot. They got played nonstop. Saw no less than, you know, one or two parties deep for each machine, like, the entire time. You know, occasionally some Scoobies would be available. There was a Total Nuclear Annihilation on the floor. There was a Halloween. Other than that, man, these things were saturated the entire time. These guys, Bug and Luke, looked like they were running ragged, trying to, you know, cover all the deals and everything. All the Looney Tunes quickly sold out. They were actually mostly pre-sold by the time the show started on Friday. Then the last two finally went. There was nearly a fist fight for the butter cabinet for Looney Tunes, I heard, but that went to a happy home, so enjoy that. TCMs, they did bring a couple of them back with them, but man, I'm telling you, you know, for me, don't discount that TCM theme. I get it. If you got kids in the house, you know, it might be a little bit too brutal for them. You know your kids better than I do. But I will say for me personally, as like a fan of the cultural icon of Leatherface, having still never seen the film, I love me some TCM. It is an intense game, and that layout just absolutely slaps. So don't discount it. Go play it. But Looney Tunes, I think, will be the one to sell out first. I think eventually they will both sell out. But I will say that we don't have to wait for them to completely sell out to see what their next game is. So I'm thinking, Scooby-Doo was released in a December time frame. These two games were released more in a November. So I think we might be seeing them walk back the clock a little bit, which would put us right in October, which would put us right at Expo. And wouldn't that be awesome if by October Expo, Looney Tunes has sold out, TCM has nearly sold out, and we may see whatever's coming next from Spooky Pinball. I will say they had one other game that was drawing a lot of attention at their booth, and that was Motorhead, which is a New Zealand homebrew. But man, this thing was playing like a brutal production machine. I'm telling you, there was a ton of interest generated in Motorhead. This is, you know, the classic rock and roll band. Like iconic, you know, Ace of Spades. Come on. Anybody, even if you don't know Motorhead, like you would recognize that song and culturally recognize Lemmy, the lead singer. So this was a game that had that old school brutality with like new school mechanisms and flippers and gameplay. So I would love to get fisted in my own home from a Motorhead. And you know, I can't say anything for sure, but the way folks were talking, I think if we could generate enough interest for this game, we could see at least a limited run by somebody. And I would not be unhappy with that. Like, this was a music pin that was just playing, you know, brutal but fair. You know, when I first played it with those suicide flippers that were on the right, I was draining left and right. But then once I learned the nuance of like dead flipping against them, man, I was in it, man. I was getting fisted, hitting the orbits, hitting the magnets, the bash target in the back, rocking with the music. The sound system was incredible. Like, you know, I love what Pulp Fiction kind of kicked off, right? You know, we got Haggis doing Fathom and Centaur and things, these old school games, which are recreations of what came before. But I like this idea of retro-inspired games with better gameplay, modern mechanics, modern coils, but that's still that same classic gameplay. We're seeing that for sure in Pulp Fiction. We're seeing that to an extent in Barbecue, of all things. But I would like to see that trend continue. Not every game should be like this. Not half the games should be like this. But one or two a year of like some retro-inspired gameplay that's fast and frenetic with like new school modes and things, I think that's a sweet spot to be in. And it would be nice to throw one of them in the lineup, you know, so it's not just wall-to-wall Sterns, right? So yeah, look at that. People were playing that late into the night. There were lines even. I got it on it early on Thursday. I got to meet the creator and everything. Super chill guy, and I wish him all the best. But this game, man, was just labor of love, amazing. Hopefully somebody can pick it up for a little boutique run. I would not be upset at that. Pinball Brothers was not there, but some of their games were. You know, actually, I saw more Queens than anything else. There was a couple of Aliens, including one in the back by whoever those game room guys were, that had like a ridiculously 3 foot tall acrylic topper on it, and some like alien armor going up and down the sides. It was nuts. Now, Alien, okay game from Andrew Highway, I get it. You know, it's not my ultimate favorite, but it's passable. You know, if I was able to trade for one and have it for a couple of months, it'd be all right. Queen, on the other hand, was playing like absolute garbage. And I think myself and my crew got on a bad version of it with weak flippers, barely making it up the ramps. Just not a good look for it. And the gameplay was pretty terrible. And, you know, who thought this out? Okay, who thought this out? This is a Barry Osler design, and, you know, dude's not impressing me a whole lot here, sorry to say. You're looking at the back box, right? You got this big acrylic of the band Queen. You've got the speaker holes cut out right over the crotches of the two, you know, Brian May and then the drummer. Like, what's going on here? You can stick your finger right into what would be their zipper fly. It's just very strange. Also, this is a music pin, and you've got the speakers in there, and then you've got this acrylic right over them. Why would you cover up the speakers on a musical pin? Open that up. You know, they took the acrylics and drilled holes in it, but like audio needs to breathe, man. You know, even putting, you know, speaker grills like we do over the speakers, even putting that little mesh foam over there, that's all deadening the sound to some extent. You know, let these things freaking breathe. Open them up. There's a reason why on the LE Sterns they don't put that little fabric covering, you know, that foam, spongy foam over the speakers, because like you've put bigger Kenwood speakers in there, you want clear delivery. So yeah, I would do that. Unless you really need to put something there just to keep people's fingers out of the speakers, open them up. Don't put them behind acrylic. That's weird, man. Some kid's going to stick a crayon in those things, puncture the speaker, and the sound's going to be even worse. I'm going to rag on this game for a while because it upsets me, because Queen is an awesome band. They deserve better than this layout, better than this tired Barry Osler layout. Maybe it's been kicking around for a decade. I don't know. It plays old, but not in a good way. The flippers were weak, and that may be because of how the game was set up. I don't think it's because it was getting played a ton. I played one of the other Queens on the floor, and you know those flippers were working better, but the gameplay was still just so boring. And Queen really deserved better. I'm hoping, you know, I don't want a company to fail. I want companies to do well, but I don't want, you know, at the same time, it's insulting when they ask us for this amount of money and this is the quality they're delivering us. So I want to get that message back to them. Got an email the other day from Rudy, their social media marketing guy, just announcing he was leaving the company, which was amazing to me because they are on the eve of another release. They're supposed to release this ABBA helicopter game April 6th, and their marketing guy who runs all their social medias and everything just gave out a very nicely worded email, but has jumped ship. And this is a guy that would know. And so I don't know if I'm super enthusiastic about where this company's going in the future. You know, they need to drop a killer game. You know, I get that they kind of rescued these old plans that were already designed by other people. They brought them out. Alien did okay. Queen is just not good. And ABBA is just not a good theme. It's not a good theme. I don't want to bring it into my house, even if it's shooting like Elton John, man. And, you know, chances are it's not going to. We still don't know who's making this thing. I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. I want to see what they have to come out with, but I'm super worried about where Pinball Brothers is. What else should we talk about here? I was getting fired up, man. Speaking of fired up, let's fire up the barbecue. So I have some thoughts. All right. Graciously, I was invited by David Fix and crew down to the factory pre-release to go play some barbecue. I had fun playing the game. I had fun playing the game at the Texas Pinball Festival. But, you know, I wasn't queuing up to play it over and over again. Played a couple four-person games so people could get a chance on it. But we were all left a little less than overwhelmed. We were a bit underdone. We didn't have that good char on the outside. I like the innovative little bash locks that they have on the game. But the game just needs more. And so here's where I'm at with it. They're not asking for $4,500 from us for this game. They're asking for $7,000. They're going head-to-head with not only Ninja Eclipse, but every Stern Pro that's available. And I have to question, who is this game for? I don't know that a barbecue restaurant is really the right place for pinball. You know, when you're looking at $7,000, that will buy you a commercial smoker. You could redo your entire kitchen setup at a barbecue place, you know, let alone, you know, trying to earn back that $7,000 plus start to turn a profit on a pinball machine that's going to gobble quarters in a place where most of the food has been cooked hours before and is ready to go, you know? So I don't know. We'll have to see what the market will tell us where it goes on this machine. The machine plays okay. I like the ramps. I like the, you know, the gameplay is relatively fun. It almost has some of like that old school charm as well. But for me, it plays like a modern game that's still missing something. And so here's what I mean for an example, just another mechanism, right? What if there was a diverter on, either, you know, one of the orbits or one of the ramps. And then when you activated it, the balls could roll over into a VUC, kick up into a smoker that could be sitting up on the left plastics, let's say, above that bash lock on the left side. A smoker that's essentially a cylinder, you know, black, looking like an old smoker, with a drop target grill right at the end there, and really functions as a tube that you can throw three balls into. They would stage there, and then the drop target could drop, and then that would release for the smoker's exploding meat explosion multi-ball, you know, meat sweat multi-balls ready, you know, or something. You know, lock balls in the smoker. That seems like an inexpensive mechanism that would add just like some other dimension to the game. You know, right now you can lock balls into the left and right saucers, put a ball up in the back corner and then go into a multi-ball. I'm sure there'll be some more as the code develops, but really it's lacking like any kind of like thing to do. You know, when you play the game, you know, you hit the shots and you're like, okay, well, I think I've kind of done everything there is to do in this game. You know, looking at Jaws Premium right now, that upper play field is sitting there and I want to get up there. When the shark pops out, like I want to bash the shark. I want to hit the chum bucket. I want to put the balls up, you know, into Quint's little tavern lodge back there and have it wrap around on the wire form. Like, I want to do all the things, right? And barbecue just doesn't have much things. And it's got some targets. It's got some ramps. It's got those inline targets, and it's got the bash locks. And then I hope you're happy with that because that's all you're getting. It's cool that they have the screen in the play field, but I want to see a bit more, especially when for $7,000 or less, if you were a location, there's a ton of other options to go with that would save you money and probably earn you more. Just as a cursory glance, I went on to Pinside and looked at a spattering of Stern Pros, because that's right what this price point is directly angled towards. And I want to see what you could do, you know, with that same amount of money. So Bond right now, mature code, game that people really like. You're not really losing much pro versus premium on that specific George Gomez designed game. You could pick one up for $5,800 right now, a full $1,000 less than what barbecue would set you back. And then you could put Bond in your barbecue restaurant. If you just want people to play a pinball machine, you'd be quicker to get your money back on there. It comes with Stern Insider Connected, which is a huge plus. And so I think when you're going head to head with a Stern Pro, you have to have a game that's even better than that in order to compete. You know, barbecue looks like Barbecue Pro. Like there's some mechanisms that have been removed at it to scale it down to a more commercial level. And like the Barbecue Premium would come with the smoker lock, you know, would come with the fully dimensional sculpts or even 3D prints than the flat plastics. You know, maybe it would come with the I'm trying to think of like a currywurst shooter rod or something, you know. Some Hillshire Farms thing, smoked sausage or something, or a brisket shooter rod, like something there, and like a better, more cohesive art package. But, you know, that's not there. So you know, Bond Pro, 5,800. What else we got? Star Wars right now. Star Wars Pro, biggest license in the known universe, $5,500 on Pinside right now. You can pick one up. Foo Fighters is going for around 6,000, and that has mature code now that 1.0 is out. Venom Pro, $5,200, and a recognizable theme. Insider Connected, progressive gameplay, save your score and continue. Even though the Pro has like almost nothing in it, you could still save some money and get yourself a known license. You could pick up a Bond Premium for $7,300, something like that. So for $1,000 more, you get like a premium pro premium game. Jaws right now, there's one for $6,500. That's $500 less than MSRP on Jaws, and that code is as deep as the Atlantic Ocean. I just played through and the bounties on that game. Even though the Pro is stripped back, it doesn't have that upper play field. It's got all the same gameplay, callouts, assets, and everything, including the bounty hunting, which is like a game within a game. I wasn't bounty hunting for sausages, and so my hope is that barbecue code continues to improve. But I'm not sure who this game quite is for. One more. How about Mandalorian? $5,200. Another Star Wars theme. You could drop that in right now. Recognizable theme. Go play with Grogu. You know, if these games were side by side, I think 9 out of 10 people would all go to the license first. And this isn't a secret. We've been asking American Pinball to grab some licenses because they got good play fields. They've got good light integrated packages. They got a good sound system. They got Christopher Franchi's phone number. All the pieces are there except for a compelling license, even though that is dead money. Initially, when you pay for the license, but isn't coming up with all of the, you know, or any kind of compelling, you know, graphics and assets and music and callouts and voiceovers. That's also money that has to be spent if you don't get a license. So, you know, maybe it's my naivete because I don't run a company, but I'm just like, who's this game for? Excuse me. Can't wait to see how this plays out. Numbers will tell us. You know, I called the Foo Fighters topper underwhelming for $2,000. And they sold right out. So we'll see. We'll see what the market has to show on that. But I can't wait to check it out. We will be able to play some more barbecue at some upcoming shows. What else do we want to talk about? Centaur. All right, I've got some thoughts on this. That's going to be on the Dawn After Dark show on the Patreon episode to follow this one. But I will say that Centaur played okay. It played like Centaur. Colorizing Centaur, I don't know, kind of a Ted Turner move to make. Charging $17,000 for a Centaur, especially even with a leather jacket and a helmet. I don't know, man. This is a game that also is available. I'm going to pause and take a moment and take a look up and see what you can get a Centaur for right now. All right, Centaur, Bally Williams, 1981. There's two available right now. One of them is in Prairie Village, Kansas for $6,000. The other one is in West Chicago, Illinois at Great American Pinball for $6,195 or best offer to go ahead and get yourself one of these games. So paying over double just to get a brand new produced, updated code, a couple of the screens in the apron, if you're into that, I don't know. It just seems super weird to me. I've got more comments. Those will be on the other show to follow this one. But grimy, man. I will say the game was pretty. The game also had that cool fire effect underneath. I am a sucker for that. I looked under the hood, and essentially there's a piece of acrylic that was CNC'd, routed, and put into the bottom wood of the cabinet. And it looked like there was one of those $15 little projectors that you would get for Spencer Gifts at the mall stuck underneath there. I kind of think that's probably what we're dealing with. And to be fair, that's probably what we're dealing with in the Elton John topper as well. So, you know, what's to keep me from getting one of those and sticking them underneath the game? Absolutely nothing except $15 and some double stick tape. So there you go. Game looked great. Game is wildly overpriced. And I think we're okay because it's probably the only one that's ever going to be produced. But thanks for bringing it to the show. I got to play it. I got to see the Orb Living Edition in person. I was trying hard to be able to see if they had a topper I could unbox, but you know, after initially being hopeful, finally they said no. In fact, I don't think we have a topper for this. Dang it, that would have been fun just because of such a rare machine that is. Multimorphic, I did get to play Princess Bride. And you know, my thoughts haven't really changed after playing it several times. It's Multimorphic, it's not for me. It plays weird. I hate the flip flippers are on different buttons. I know that you can put them all on the same button, but what I'm hearing from people that have owned it, it's either been okay or it's melted some boards and coils. So I don't know. I can just tell you that the manufacturer had it set up this way, and everyone I've played has been set up the same way. So that's how I'm judging it. And you know, I think it's you know, 1/3 of an okay game. I don't get the utilization of that whole screen down there. The resolution's not the greatest. It's got acrylic over it with balls running on it. So it's like looking through some frosted glass at times. I don't know that it added any compelling gameplay whatsoever to The Princess Bride, other than displaying the same graphics that we're playing on the LCD screen above. You know, I get that there was some little areas that were lit up with arrows pointing to the different spots to shoot when it was ready. And, you know, there's some cascading hearts and things, but it just seems like a gimmick and not integral to the gameplay at all. Plus, at the expense of putting a screen to the bottom 2/3 of the game, you have to then cantilever these flippers and slings with these other metal or plastic rods that are coming out on the gameplay field. It's just really weird. And you have to make the inlanes see-through so they don't block into the graphics. It's just strange. And I don't think that the trade-off is worth it. I think for the price, there's much more fun things to spend your money on than one of these things. I think I'll kind of stick with my take that I had before. I think a multimorphic owner can probably tell you about 10 reasons why they're happy that they have it, and people that don't own it can come up with 10 weak reasons equally compelling about why they don't. If you like it, yeah, go ahead and enjoy it. That's no problem. If I already had one of these machines in my downstairs, I probably for sure would buy the standard version of this, because the game was fun playing it, and I love the theme so much. But there's just better options out there. I really wish that they had this in a traditional cabinet that I could go play. But alas, here it is. More thoughts to come up on the follow-up show. Turner Pinball. Get to hang out with my buddy Chris Turner. Man, he did the right thing and put this game in a standard cabinet, brought the price down where it should be, and people were having fun with some Ninja Eclipse. Now, he wants to sell the preliminary version of 100 units, and I think that's probably an achievable goal now. At nearly $10,000, I don't know that that would have been possible, especially with a cabinet that just reminded people of the cheaper, really consumer-grade pinball, not commercial-grade pinball that Costco was selling about a decade ago, you know, the Zizzle machines. So I'm glad it looks like a real cabinet. The back box has a back panel. It's got a top on there that can hold a topper. It's got a coin door. There's a bottom in place. I was all over this machine, top to bottom, checking it out because I wanted to report, like, yes, they actually have put it in a real cabinet. They powder coated the armor. It's got a coin door with barrels of fun. I'm talking to you. Two coin slots in that door. So kudos to them. So they also have a shooter rod, which I love so much. I don't like the shooter buttons. I want the shooter rods. I felt connected to the game. Played it about half a dozen times. It played well. I had fun with the modes. I did okay. And so, yeah, it's a much better machine than what they brought to Expo. So I could see them selling 100 of these, you know, definitely easier than I could see selling 100 Punny Factories, because there's more compelling gameplay in this game than in something like Punny Factory. There's more things mechanistically going on, which is what I enjoy. The ball paths were fun. The ninjas jumping scoop to scoop and then up to the upper flipper was fun every time. There were a couple of things that were altered or removed on this version than what we played at Expo. The ball locking mechanism on the right ramp is now virtual. There's not a physical ball lock back there anymore. And some of the 3D printed sculpts have reverted to flat plastics, which means they can just as easily, be re-sculpted, printed, painted, and available in the secondary market to put back in there. I saw a lot of opportunities for that. You know, the gameplay's fun. I didn't play it enough to really wrap my head around all of the modes, but I think this game has a solid chance of being around for a while, and actually would be much easier to put into a commercial location, and at least would generate more interest than I think a barbecue would, and definitely more than a Punny Factory. So there you go. Great job, Chris. He was a friend of the show. He was on one of the last episodes I uploaded from TPS. Came and talked to us with it was nice soothing dulcet tones for a while, and kind of explaining everything to us. But again, right at that Stern Pro level, I think this is much more of a comparison, you know, head-to-head versus what you would get from something like a barbecue. And, you know, David Fakes, also friend of the show, super cool guy. You know, I love his enthusiasm in pinball. He's the one that's making these decisions, and I'm, maybe he knows more than I do about, you know, getting these things sold. And, you know, maybe the game is going to be hitting their marketing targets. But it's not the theme that I would have put together for this. And I would have included a bit more and still try to keep that bomb kind of relatively still where it needs to be. What else? I think that covers kind of everybody there. I have some more thoughts I want to get into for the Patreon members at the $5 level. If you want a t-shirt, they're awesome, man. People were digging them. I got silk screen shirts, no heat transfer, $30 mailed to your door. Canada, throw an extra $5 or something. And the next person to order one at donspinbulkpodcast@gmail.com gets this Fathom sticker. It looks awesome. It's the whole back glass. It's got a sheen to it. I mean, this would be a $10 sticker, I would think. I managed to come back with one of them. And so I will get that out included to you as well as a golden ticket. Otherwise, anybody ordering this week, I'll include a golden ticket as well. So you can go ahead and have one and pretend you were there. And if you were there and didn't get to find one, you're still going to have one. So how about that? Gameplay-wise, I'm having a lot of fun with Jaws, man. This code is great already. I really, really like this game. I can't wait to trick the heck out of it. All right, is there anything else I need to talk about? I think that's about it for this episode. As always, more will come later in the week. I never slow down, never seem to stop, and neither does the pinball news, and I'll keep bringing it to you. DonSpinballPodcast@gmail.com, way to get at me. DonSpinballPodcast on YouTube. Patreon.com/DonSpinballPodcast. Go ahead and join and get in on the bonus episode I'm about to record, where I'm gonna dish out a little more personal stuff and my personal takes and everything. Be good to everybody. Later.